Vibrant
music teaching.
Proven and practical
tips,
strategies,
and ideas
for music teachers.
This is the Vibrant Music Teaching Podcast, and today we're talking about lessons for piano teachers from learning to knit. When was the last time that you learned something new? If you're a teacher, I think it's essential that we keep trying to learn new things, and especially not just new things within our particular industry or our specialty, but outside of it. Broadening our perspectives and keeping ourselves involved in that learning experience. One of the low stakes things that I learned last year, end of last year, beginning of this year, is I learned how to knit. I knew how to knit a little bit, to be fair, but not really. I had done, you know, the basics when I was in school. I probably could have remembered how to make a stitch when someone had already cast on for me. But I decided to properly learn to knit and commit to it over my winter break, my Christmas break last year. And the year before, I had learned how to crochet, which gave me a new perspective on knitting and a new determination to give it a go. But I don't really want to talk to you about knitting today. I'm just using that as an analogy for some of the things that we can learn from being in this new learning process and from knitting specifically that we can then apply to our teaching. Now, before I go any further, I want to address the grey elephant in the room, which is this item. I did not knit this. I'm not that good yet. This was knit by my wonderful mother-in-law, and it's beautiful and it's cozy and I love it. I did not knit it myself. So I have 5 lessons for you today. And the first one is that you need time and focus, especially at the beginning of something new. So I mentioned that I learned to crochet 1 year and then knit the next year over my Christmas break. And this is partly due to my determination to actually take a break over Christmas, because it's the one time of year when my online business and my teaching and everything, it's pretty quiet. I'm still on the line for any possible website emergencies, but in general, I'm not really needed. So I very determined to take those 2 weeks off every year in recent years. And it helps me to have a project to focus on that, again, is kind of low stakes. If I wasn't successful learning to knit, that's okay. You know, nothing's relying on it. But I did have that time and that space to focus. And I think that's really important at the beginning of trying something new. If you've ever tried to learn a new thing when you're in kind of a panic state, when you need to know this thing right now, it's a very different experience to when you're just learning it because you want to learn it, right? Now, how does this apply to piano lessons? I think we can pick up on this in piano lessons. There's this newness energy that a lot of students and parents have when they first start lessons. We need to either instill that or use it to its best advantage. So some parents and students come in with that newness energy and they're most involved in our lesson environment, in the process, right at the beginning, especially the parents, right? When piano lessons are new, they're focused on, okay, how do I help my child with this? How do I support them? What are all the new things I need to learn about and do? And they therefore usually make a little bit of extra space in their lives. Maybe not enormous amounts, but a little bit. This is our opportunity when they're in that brand new thing state to grab that attention. This is why things like a student not having a good keyboard or piano at the beginning of lessons end up being such a big deal. Because if I let a student start lessons before they get a reasonable instrument, before they have anything to practice on, and let's say the parent means to but doesn't manage to get them that instrument for the first month, I've lost that. You can't get that back. That, like, oh my gosh, everything's so new, everything's exciting. I'm not saying they'll never practice or they'll never be successful. Of course they can and could be. But we've missed an opportunity. We've missed a chance to get started on the right foot. This is the same reason why sometimes teachers, including teachers who work here, are tempted to not really give any assignments the first week or two. Like, they won't put anything in their Vivid Practice account, which is our practice app that we use, or they, you know, will try to go easy on them. That's the opposite of what we should do. We should give them something to be excited about and to practice right away so that they can develop the routine of practice. We shouldn't give them something super challenging right at the beginning. It should be easy and doable and something they'll be really successful with at home, but they do need something to do so that they can get that practice routine going when they're the most enthusiastic about getting the practice routine going. So that's lesson number one, the energy of a new hobby, how we can use it for ourselves, and think about trying to make the most of it for our students. And if they don't have it, we need to try and generate some of that, because if they're not excited in the beginning, oh my gosh, we might have a big uphill battle ahead of us. Lesson number two then, you need to plateau to make learning stick and then up level. So in knitting, this looks like learning one basic stitch, how to do a basic cast on, a basic stitch, and then a cast off. And you need to either do a project or just do practice squares or something with just that, just the knit stitch, for example, for a while until you feel a bit comfortable with it and ready for a new challenge. And then when you add something new, the purl stitch, you need to get comfy with that and then add a new challenge. Then you might learn ribbing, then you might apply that in different ways or learn how to decrease and increase, etc. But you need some kind of step-by-step process, and you need time at each level to condense that knowledge. And that's the thing we often make the mistake about in piano. Sure, some students can learn a new concept on every single piece they learn and have it stick because they're just very focused and they have great attention to detail, or they drill it at home, or whatever the case may be. But most students, to be comfortable with the learning process, need to learn about the thing and then get lots of practice with just that thing and feel successful with it before we add another new thing. And this is where method books can be helpful, but we also need to be aware of where the holes are in them. Some method books, it feels like they do introduce something new on every second page. And the new thing might not be enormous. In fact, they maybe could have put it all on one page and then reinforced it for several pages, but it can feel overwhelming. So being aware of that with our students, of where those pitfalls are, maybe in the method books we use or the way that we teach, and having a feeling for, does this student need to plateau? We use that word negatively, but I've used it intentionally here to mean, hey, there's nothing wrong with it. Let's imagine we're climbing a mountain, right? We go up a little bit. We would be very grateful if we got to go across for a little bit before going up a little bit again. You know? Depends on your goals and objectives. But in general, that's a more pleasant mountain climbing experience than if you just go, like, I don't know, 90 degrees. 90 degrees would be impossible. 45 degrees straight up the whole time, right? If we just have this constant incline and we're just going against it, going against it, going against it. We might put up with that climbing a mountain because it might only be, you know, an hour or two of our lives and we feel great at the top of the mountain. But now imagine doing that for months in the realm of piano studies. We can't always feel like we're pushing the boulder up the hill. Sometimes we have to feel like we get to go on easy street for a little bit and enjoy the skills we already have. Lesson number three is to know yourself. In the case of piano teaching, know your students. So when I was beginning to knit, I followed a tutorial to learn the basic stitches, you know, did some practice of them. Then I tried straight away a project for a fingerless glove, like a sleeve thing, you know, a wrist warmer. Most of the advice I was reading online was telling me, do a scarf first, do like a garter stitch scarf. But I felt, you know, I get it. And also, I don't mind if these wrist warmers go wrong. And I kind of get what they're talking about in the tutorial, and I'm just going to go for it. And then after those, where did I go? I did a little bit more practice just with spare wool I had lying around of some things I needed practice with. From there was like, right, I'm going to start my first jumper or sweater for those on the other side of the Atlantic. I'm going to start my first jumper and just go for it. And again, if you read the advice, it'll say, okay, do this and do that and do that. And, you know, it'll have a lot more steps before they get to, and now try your first jumper. But for me, I know myself pretty well. And I know that I wasn't going to be bothered by it. Not that I was going to do it perfectly. That mistakes wouldn't bother me that much. And if the jumper didn't turn out like anything, that would be fine by me. But I wanted to just go for it. So that's what I did. And in the world of piano, that's about knowing ourselves when we're talking about our own projects and commitments. For our students, knowing them and what level of challenge is right for them. Sometimes we can jump ahead. Sometimes we have a student come to us and they say, I just really want to play whatever. The theme from Amelie. Whatever the case may be. And they're nowhere near that level. But they're not so far from it that it's impossible for them to play. And we're thinking, hey, should I let them go for it? Now, in many cases, especially if a student is a little bit older, I'll put it back to them. Listen, you could learn this right now. It's going to feel really challenging. And it's going to take you about this amount of time if you practice every day. Right? So a lot of the time I put that back on them. But that's not always a bad thing, jumping up several levels. It doesn't mean they know everything in between, or we don't need to go back over some stuff and we don't need to do pieces below that level ever again. It's not like they've actually skipped ahead. But if that's what's going to feel satisfying to them, if that's what they really want to do, just like what I really want to make is a jumper because I don't really wear scarves, so like it's a waste of my time, it feels like. Let's let them jump ahead and let's see how it goes, right? So we need to know what level of challenge is right. And that's a big example for a student who wants to jump up several levels. But quite often, it's a case of just us planning the repertoire and the material and saying, this student isn't being challenged enough. I can just feel it. Or this student is being too challenged, right? Going back to our previous point, we need a plateau here. We need to do some lateral moves, as we often call them, right? So to do some extra books and repertoire that are at this level before we go on to the next level, to condense that learning further. Lesson number 4 from my knitting journey so far is to try not to bake in mistakes because it's a lot slower to undo them. And this is a lesson for us in our own practice and also for our students' practice. I mentioned that I started learning crochet a year before I learned to knit. And one of the things that's really appealing about crochet is if you make a mistake, you can just undo it. You can just pull out the yarn and do it again. And you just pick up where you left off, you know, where you were several rows back or however far back you need to go. And sure, you've lost that time, but who really cares? It's your hobby. And you can just pick it up again. It doesn't really take any extra time to undo it. It's literally like this. And then you can go back to wherever you want to go back to. Knitting is not like that. If you need to undo your knitting, especially when you're a beginner and you're not very good at re-picking it back up, it's quite a process to undo it, and you might end up making more mistakes along the way of undoing it than that were maybe bigger than the mistake you were trying to fix. I think this has a lesson for practice. Not for telling students they shouldn't make mistakes. Absolutely, they should be okay with making mistakes. That's how we learn. But we shouldn't make reckless mistakes. We shouldn't make mistakes that are unnecessary. So we shouldn't have constant errors in our pieces just because we're moving too fast and breaking things. Because then it takes so much longer to undo that, to relearn that section that it would have to learn it first in the right way. Right? I mean, we all know this. But knitting is like this physical manifestation of that. So maybe, you know, if you knit, if you have a student who really just this isn't hitting home, you might actually take out your knitting and show them something that's not important to you. Show them how you make a mistake and then continue on and then have to go back to it. Could be a fun demonstration. Let me know if you give it a go. But I think the bigger lesson is going slowly, being careful in order to go faster. My final lesson is inspiration, not inferiority. And I actually think this might be a reverse lesson. I think this might be something, I mean, I've no evidence for this, but perhaps from the fact that I studied music is why I'm able to think like this. Let me know if you feel you're better than average at this, or maybe it's just me, maybe it's just a natural thing with me. If I watch, you know, a YouTube knitter and they're showing what they do and what the projects they've done or talking about their process or whatever, and they're way beyond my level, which most people are. I've only done a little bit of it. I don't feel inferior to them. That doesn't make me feel bad about myself. It never bothers me. I'm just inspired by what they're doing, or I learn and pick up things by being kind of immersed in what they're talking about, which is why I enjoy watching the videos, because they're chatting away and you start to become comfortable with the terms, which helps you, you know, read patterns and understand what's going on when you've done something wrong or whatever the case may be. But none of that is a negative, comes with negative emotions for me. And again, I think maybe this is a reverse lesson. Maybe I learned that resiliency from music, I don't know. But it is extremely important in music as well. When our students are looking at people who are further ahead on the musical journey than they are, or learning repertoire that is more advanced, they're not inferior to them. They're not lesser. It should be just fun and inspiring to see people doing something cool with music, and you're doing your own thing. And if we can help our students to think like that, and if we can think about like that about our own music making and our own teaching, I think we'll all be so much better off. Those are my lessons from knitting. Let me know what hobbies or interests or maybe languages even you've taken up recently, what you've been learning about, how it's affected your teaching. I'd love to hear from you.
Vibrant Music Teaching Membership costs less than the price of one lesson each month. That is totally worth it for all of the courses, games, resources, downloadables, printables that you can get access to as a member, as well as a fabulous community support you'll find inside. Go to vmt.ninja and become part of the revolution.